Well, because normally I see myself. Don't we see ourselves?
Yeah, it's because...
Okay. Well, we drink water. I'm sorry.
There we go.
You look great.
Oh,
see, it's not too much lipstick, right?
No, it's like you're right.
That you've just pumped it up a little bit.
I almost didn't wear it.
It looks really pretty. No, it's... Okay. I think it's fun.
You look lovely. Oh.
It turned out well.
All right. Let's try this again. All right, here comes the music.
Hi, I'm Bonnie Burkert. And this is Truth Be Told, Transformation, sharing tools for transformation to live your highest truth. Today we're going to look to the stars and talk about one of my favorite subjects, astrology. I'm welcoming Tulsi Bagnolia to the UBN Truth Be Told studios. Hi, Tulsi.
Hi, Bonnie.
Thanks for being here.
Such an honor. Thank you for having me.
I really like to start things off to just tune in. It helps you and I be here, be present, but also anyone that's listening. So we discussed a mantra.
Absolutely.
Please introduce that to us real quick.
In the Vedic tradition, we honor the remover of obstacles, which we call Ganesha or Ganapati. And before talking about the ancient wisdom, I love to honor Saraswati,
yes,
the goddess of knowledge and wisdom, and offering the mantras to clear the energy in the space and call in this sacred knowledge.
Thank you.
Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha. Om Aim Saraswatiye Namaha. Om Bhagavatya Kritam Savam Nikinchit Avasishyate. Iriam Yastatu Rasmakam Maheshri. Sasmita Sasmita Tamno Inseta Paramapara. Estamai Steve Vishram Tho Shiti Amalanani. Tas Dide Vidio Vedhandara Disambatam. Behesmat Prashanatvam. Vedha Savadham Dike.
Saraswati. Jai Jai Saraswati. Thank you. So Vedic knowledge, okay? Before we talk about Vedic astrology, let's touch on the Vedic knowledge. Now Vedic, the word itself means knowledge, is that correct?
Means ancient knowledge.
All right, great. Yes. So back it in, because under the Veda, well, we know about the Vedas. We know about a Vedic lifestyle, correct?
Yes.
And Vedic astrology, as mentioned in the intro to the show, is a sister science to Ayurveda and yoga. So tie this all in for us, please.
Beautiful. Well, so the Vedas are this body of knowledge which ultimately helps us to remember our true nature, to come back to the self and align with the ever-changing cycles that we find within and without. And they say in the Vedas that Jyotish or Jyoti, meaning light, and Ish is the embodiment of or the devata or god of light. They say that Jyotish is the eyes of the Veda, the all-knowing quality of light. And so the three together as the sister sciences help us attune with that which is ever-changing and non-changing and kind of helps to weave them back together.
Okay, wow, that's amazing. I'm going to jump around a little bit. I know we referenced intro to Vedic astrology, but I want to just talk to you about astrology in general, because I want to ask, is it written in the stars, or can we change it? Because to me, through yoga and Ayurveda, and Ayurveda being the science of life, I use it, I reference it on a daily basis in terms of keeping in balance, keeping my body, my vessel in balance. So if we do our yoga, again, also about balance, and study how to do so through the science of Ayurveda, can we then change our astrology?
Such a beautiful question, Bonnie. My dad, who's also a Vedic astrologer, says that if we couldn't change it, we wouldn't be talking about it. And I really love that. I know that there's many different types of karma. Some are just fixed, right? We're born to certain parents in a certain location, and our eyes are a certain color, and we can't change that. We can artificially alter it for a moment. And with awareness, that's what it is, the light of awareness and the capacity to exercise our free will, then knowing that, okay, I want to go to the beach on Monday. Oh, it's going to rain on Monday. Cool, I'll bring an umbrella. Or I'll wait till Tuesday, right? And so I think with that light of awareness and exercising our free will through our observances, you know, observing our practice, our breath, what we take in. Absolutely.
Okay. So that's really, really important. And so everybody, I mean, regardless, there's no such thing necessarily as like star-crossed lovers or anything like that, right? Let's believe that there isn't. Now, karma, I think that's a term that people misuse. So I'm sure that you can help clarify the meaning of that as well. And then, of course, as it ties into what you see in people's charts and whatnot. But let's talk about karma. Mm-hmm. Because I think people feel like that is something that is set in stone, or what they've done, and they've reaped this karma, and so they're never going to be able to change anything. And again, through all the different offerings, the beautiful mantra work that you demonstrated, breath work as a yoga teacher, I think we can evolve as well. So what is karma, and can we fix ourselves?
For me, karma is really a mystery. It's unfathomable, they say, karma. They do say, as you sow, so shall you reap. Mm-hmm. And I think often we celebrate good karma, right, when we're reaping the benefits. And sometimes we look down upon that which is negative. And I think karma is beyond all of that.
Yeah.
Karma is what we're experiencing in this, what grand design ushered us into this experience. And within the stars hold the architecture of that which has become ripe for us to experience in this lifetime. And so I believe that we're incurring our future karma in each moment, and that we're here based on our thought, speech, and action from the past. And when someone says, oh, you messed up, you're going to incur bad karma. Mm-hmm. You know, some people say, why do bad things happen to good people? And karma is unfathomable. We don't know where that karma is coming from. And my teacher's teacher was giving a big lecture one day, and everyone was just hanging on his every word. And a man came and was screaming and yelling and interrupted this grand lecture. And the guru said, please, please get this man some food. Take him to the other room and give him a feast. And his students became angry and said, why did you do this? And he said, he was taking away some of my negative karma. I should celebrate him and feed him. And so it's that benevolence, right? It's welcoming all, right? It's not good. It's not bad. It is what is. And I think that's what we're learning, is not to be attached to the fruits of the karma that we're creating or experiencing.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting, because it is ever evolving. And your teacher was able to recognize that the kind deed, the kind turn he gave to the crazy man would ultimately help him. So this is something that we can all learn from, right? It's like, the rising tides, you know, rising tides, all the ships go rise with all the rising tides, or something like
that,
right?
Yeah, when the tide rises in the harbor, all the boats rise.
Thank
together.
You. That's really what I was trying to say. See, vast wisdom indeed.
Teamwork.
With all the indeed. So okay, let's talk about you. I liked it. You know, you mentioned your teacher. So where were you? Let's go a little bit on the path on how you came to have this wisdom at such a young age.
I was born to teachers of transcendental meditation. And I grew up in a community and went to a school where we practice yoga and meditation twice a day. And we were chanting from the
Fairfield,
Bhagavad
correct?
Gita. Yes.
Fairfield, Iowa, yes. Which is where I finished high school, only about 50 right. miles away from there. Isn't that crazy?
Such a small world.
I just love that. I wish I would have known about it then. Who knows?
Absolutely.
I'd be able to chant like that.
We all come to it when we need to. And I think one of my first memories is hearing a very wise man, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, speak to a group of us in Iowa. I was laying in my mother's lap. I must have been less than a year old, and always I was always intrigued by his voice, his presence, and of course I rebelled like anyone. But having something so young, they have to really appreciate it and find it for their own eyes. And when I did, I did resist a little bit, but I couldn't get enough. I became so thirsty for that wisdom to flow and to experience it all.
That's great. So you were, so basically all your life, and your father was an astrologer as well, which is incredible. And does he ever look at your chart and for you? I mean, I'm sure through the years he has, but does he look and say, like, look at how she's done this? And I wonder if you could see that you were going to be following in his footsteps that way.
That's such a cute question, because I remember talking to him last year, like, when can we look at my chart? And the sweet thing is, I think in every conversation he's speaking about my chart, about the stars. And as he says it, he doesn't speak the language of astrology. Some people who come to him don't even know that he's an astrologer.
Mm-hmm.
He's so relatable, and he's always guiding and always knowing, and just almost seems very psychic at times. And so he's really encouraged me. Maybe a decade ago, he said, you know, when I leave, I would like to, you know, send my clients to you. And I went, okay. You know, and I remember at that moment, I was, you know, even nervous to ask for money for a chart. It's just been such a passion for me to share. So I thought, okay, maybe I need to go take some more classes so I can, you know.
Well, at what exactly. It's like, at what point do we know that we are strong enough or masterful enough, right, to put it out there? And I'm glad, because I've known you for now for quite some time, and it's really great to see you, you know, standing tall, putting a stake in the ground that way. So you were, you talked to your father, you kind of had to go off on your own, and I'm imagining that India really factored in. So you knew that this was all, I mean, you were immersed basically in the studies of Vedic sciences. What was it like once you finally got to India and were able to go to the motherland?
Mm. I actually was the Mahasamadhi of my guru that took me to India for the first time, and I arrived the day after my birthday, and it was 2 a.m. in Delhi, and it was so covered in smog. There was a red light, and it was smelly, and I was brought to my knees. Hmm. My head went right to the earth, and I
really
felt like I had arrived
home.
Wow,
amazing, despite the intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And how long of an experience would that have been, and what all did you learn in that first trip?
Yeah, the first time I was there for a month, I spent some days, we went directly to Varanasi, and it was just, it was just a homecoming for me. It was, I felt more at home there than even here in America. It felt like my people, my culture. And getting to go to the Ganga and offer, you know, prayers for my guru, and then going to Allahabad, Prayag, to where the rivers meet, and just being immersed for days in the celebration of this great master's life. I can still hear the chanting and smell the roses. It's like, it's very nostalgic talking about that. And some dear friends of mine got married in Rishikesh, and I got to be part of their wedding, and just, it felt a little bit like a dream. And I got to meet my guru's teacher's first disciple and carry my guru's Rudraksha beads, his meditation beads. And so it was very mystical.
Oh, indeed. That's so incredible. That's so powerful. So did you have any exposure to the practice of astrology over there? Because I really, I feel like for as long as I've studied yoga and had knowledge of the sages of India, it took me a minute to get around to Vedic astrology. So you were describing beautiful rituals, certainly the physical practice of yoga, you know, the sacred sites of the river Ganges. You're explaining that. But where did you have an awakening around astrology? Did you have a chance to speak to any people that were experts over there?
That's so fascinating that you said that. I've been there three times. And I think for me, the stars has just been such a passion that I never even sought it out when I was in India. I didn't know. I spoke with the one, you know, I paid $10 and had one of these readings. it was kind of a joke almost, which I knew ahead of time going into it, but I had a gap in between my teeth. I was having my teeth moved, and this astrologer just couldn't talk about the gap in your tooth. You're going to be so wealthy. And I said, yesterday, no gap. Tomorrow, no gap. And he goes, today, you're going to be so wealthy. I said, thank you so much. And so I think I really only brushed past a little bit. For me, Indy, I was really seeking out a singing teacher when I went there. Jyotish for me never was something I was seeking out a teacher for until right after we met each other, you know, maybe 7 years ago ish. I think actually after the last time I was in India. And so I always meet astrologers. I think now that I'm talking about it, I met probably 5 Vedic astrologers, just very embodied teachers, and I'd sit there and we'd have chai and they'd give me some downloads. So nothing, it was never official, my studies, besides with my dad, until about 7 years ago. But yes.
Yeah.
And you know, it's these wise sages would just give, you know, but no one from India.
Yeah, but it was informed, but everything that you've done, I think, informs what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And now you working as an astrologer, you basically get a person's time of birth and location and pull their chart, prepare their chart, right? So the study of it. And then what's it like? I mean, when you talk, because we have not had a chance to do a reading yet. But we will, for sure. Christmas present for myself. And do you then turn into a channel that way for the information that comes through? Mm. Or do you break it down and say, well, because I remember having Anand, our teacher Anand, looking and telling me about, I was born near the time of a full moon and I have Venus is exalted. Those were two specific things that he said about my chart.
This makes sense.
So, so what's it like in general when people work with you? I'd love to give people a little exposure of what that's like. And I'm sure you launch into a lot of suggestions as well as the facts of what's actually there.
I love this question. Really reflecting on it, I don't know if anyone's asked me this question. Around 20 years ago was the first time I had people approaching me. I was in college and people, oh, will you look at my chart? And I said, well, I look at your chart. Okay. I'm like, I don't really know anything. Like, even today, the more I learn, the more I really know, I just know nothing at all. But I can be a channel and I do my best. And I remember just sitting there looking at the chart and information would just come to me. And I remember one of my mentors, I've had so many mentors come in, older, wiser astrologers, almost feeling out of nowhere. I didn't ever really seek it out. Say, where is that in the chart? And I'd say, I don't know. Mm. So that's when I said, okay, I would like to do some more official studying. And so the process of analysis and synthesis, it's the more I know, the more I need to put it into test, right? And I think that's the beauty, because there's such a vast amount of knowledge that we have to put it into experience, because that's what's so beautiful about Jyotish, is not one chart, even of identical twins, is going to be the same. It's always evolving and always alive and always so interesting, because before you is sitting this grand design, this architecture of an individual that's live, living, breathing. And so I sit with a chart. I sit with it and just ask what needs to be seen and what needs to be spoken in such a way that it's uplifting, right, for all involved. And then I analyze it, right? Then I go into the science and I go really deep in it. And then I put both of those things aside and I sit with the person. And sometimes I prepare this whole thing and we're going to talk about this. Like, oh, there's something with the father and education and because of what they're wearing. Or I believe in nimitta. When there's an animal, an omen, right? I was just eating lunch with a dear friend and we were talking about this thing that was kind of escalating and these birds flew into the restaurant, landed on this thing, and all this dust came at us. I mean, it was very visceral.
Yes.
And so I find that whenever I do an astrology chart, there's something like that. I've had a bobcat come up. I've had an earthquake happen in the middle of a chart. And so if I just sat down with an agenda and they sat down and they're like, I just want to talk about this. I was like, well, that's not what I prepared. Mm. How could I serve them? And so I like to be very well, I like to be overly prepared. I'm such a researcher. I know that I'm not just researching for them. It's for my legacy of research. And yeah, so I sit there and we could talk about someone's chart for days. You know, sometimes people are leaving. They're like, well, what about this? And I like to really dive into what's potent for the individual in that moment.
That's so amazing. Okay, that's great. So I'm going to break it down another way. And ask a bit more about Vedic versus Western astrology. And I was doing a little homework before talking, and you know, this is all vast. And I've been so interested in astrology, and it is just like you say, there's so much to know. And I'm determined. You know, I'm thinking I'm going to get more. So I just found out, for example, they do not have the planets Pluto, Neptune, and Uranus, right?
This is true, yes.
So that would be one distinction. Mm-hmm. Did you know this? as a Pisces, where's my Neptune? What do I do? What are you going to say to me with in Vedic astrology if there's no Neptune to reference?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jupiter rules Pisces.
Okay.
In the Vedic system. And I'm so... To say I'm not an expert in Western astrology is just, I'm not even allowed to say I'm not an expert. I just barely know much about, but I do know because I've given so many workshops that I want to, and I usually say, if there's anyone who knows more, please interrupt me, because there is quite a bit of differences.
Yeah.
And in the ancient texts, we don't use those three planets. However, I always pull them up because if one's sitting in the first house, or, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, this is what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very rare, but when it is, it might consume most of the reading.
So oh, I see. Okay.
I'm open to them.
So go ahead. Tell me a little bit more about, I'm not even going to try to get started, but I know, let's just say, I'm going to go with some of the basics that it's based on the original. I mean, first of all, astrology did originate in India. And then Westerners took it over, and I think it was the Greeks. Am I correct?
Yes.
I wonder where the Egyptians factored in with astrology.
I heard that it also predated the Greeks and the Western influence. I think the Egyptians are a similar time, perhaps after, according to what some of my teachers have shared.
Yeah. Well, if anybody has some comments, we want to know. Come on the show.
Yes,
exactly. So, again, now, from what I learned, you can correct me. This the Vedic astrologers studied the heavens based on where the stars were at the time. And thus the name, is that where we get the name sidereal?
Close. Oh. Very close. So
I could get it on a multiple choice, but not on an essay question.
So the fundamental difference, we could say that Vedic astrology is an observational science.
Okay.
Yes, I have a very fancy computer system that calculates not even just one birth chart. There's many other charts that I look at, mostly the ninth divisional chart, which we call the Navamsha, which perhaps we'll get to today. So this science is based off of the observational fixed position of the stars as they move across the ecliptic. And this is very precise. That's why their predictions can look back 2,000 years and even into the future, because they have included or accounted for the wobble of the Earth and the precession of the equinoxes. Again, I'm not an expert in my limited research, so if there's anyone to correct me, please. From my research, I think it's Ptolemy in, I think, 1000 AD-ish, was looking to where the sun found 0 degrees Aries. And at that moment of this prediction of trying to calculate a seasonal astrology to what I understood to be something very relatable, something that we could calculate more without sitting with a telescope and tracking things for a long time, To be the spring equinox.
Oh, that's so great. So seasonal being seasonal. The operative word in this.
Which is the Gregorian calendar, which is a more modern thing, right?
Yeah.
And so, but we have all agreed upon this Gregorian calendar for the most part. And so the 21st of March, correct?
Yes.
Is 0 degrees Aries for the sun. Well, in the observational fixed position of the stars at that time, this was also true. However, since Vedic astrology is based differently than the seasons, the calculation of 0 degrees Aries at the spring equinox isn't eternally true. Every 72 years, because of the precession of the equinox, they move apart about 1 degree. So, right now, sidereal and tropical are about 23 degrees different, according to which ayanamsha you use, or the calculation. And so sidereal or Vedic astrology moves behind Western astrology. And Vedic astrology, we have a full moon coming up. If you use a telescope, the moon lies in the constellation of the Vedic astrology system because of the way it's calculated.
Yeah. Okay. That's epic.
Did that make sense? I felt like a science teacher for a moment.
No, and it's good. And there's, I mean, first of all, I love that. And I wanted, I mean, I used to go to astronomy class and be like, wow. And, you know, it was hard to retain. It was just so mind blowing. But no, it's great. And you will certainly give us all a chance to look at it and study it a little bit further. So let me ask you now, in Vedic astrology, we still have Aries, Taurus, Gemini.
Absolutely.
Who am I forgetting? Cancer, Leo, la la la. Okay.
Yes.
Right. So did the Indians create that? Was it created in India?
So that's a beautiful question. And I recently reheard this. So again, correct me if I'm wrong, anyone. I actually heard the 12 signs of the zodiac were the influence of the Greek. In Vedic astrology, we look beneath the zodiac to 27 constellations.
Uh-huh.
So the moon travels around the earth at about 27 days, 7 hours. So there's different calculation systems. There's an ancient system that rounded up to 28 constellations. And the one that we use in modern day is with the even nakshatra or constellation system to have 27 constellations that lie behind the zodiac. And so the sun travels around the earth every 365 days-ish. And if you divide that by 27, it's 13 degrees, 20 minutes. So each constellation moves through the zodiac at 13 degrees, 20 minutes, which means we have 2.5 constellations per sign.
Oh, interesting. I can't wait to find out.
So.
I can't wait to find out what mine are. That's really great. Okay. Yes. All right. So... okay, now this is getting some serious nitty gritty, and I want to go. I'm going to pull it back and speak generally on astrology, and you can let me know what you know about it from a Vedic astrology standpoint. Ready?
Yes.
Can you guess what I'm going to ask you?
I can't.
Mercury retrograde.
Ooh.
So, I mean, I think people have gotten more and more and more interested in astrology.
Yes.
And that is, I mean, it's almost laughable how people make fun of Mercury retrograde. It's always Mercury retrograde. No, no, no. I always think every time I monitor it, every time it happens, I'm telling you, I try to ignore it, but it feels like it's happening. So, Tulsi, I ask you the question. One, you can speak on what it is, what you know about it from your standpoint, okay? Now, this is very broad. That happens to everybody, and I know that you really specialize in speaking with individuals. And then, so I'll let you talk about that in general, and as well as if you want to comment on people's fascination with it and almost to the point of laughter, but I think it's kind of exciting people are knowing about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a phenomenon that you see all over Instagram. And
well, that's... yes.
Hear about in coffee shops.
It's kind of crazy how people know about it. So what do you think? I mean, is that something that comes up? I consider you informed about the heavens. So what do you think about that particular phenomenon?
Well, first of all, I want to say in Vedic astrology, the planets we consider grahas. They're a being, they're an embodiment. And I've fallen under this blame of, oh, it's Mercury retrograde, oh, I can't talk, all, you know, all these things, right? We're blaming, you know, giving an excuse. And in reality, Mercury goes retrograde about 3 or 4 times a year. So it happens almost every season. And if we only shot arrows forward, we would never be pulling them back. And I think we've misunderstood the value of silence. And I think Mercury retrograde is that pulling back of the mind so we can reflect about what we want to say. We can revisit those things we've placed on the back burner, and that it's so personal, right? Sometimes I feel like I can communicate better during Mercury retrograde than I'm in Mercury retrograde all the other times. And I don't even have that Mercury retrograde in my chart. So we never know. With each retrograde, it's in a different constellation. We know that it's moving closer to the sun and that it's more of an inward time. And I think it's beautiful just the awareness of it, because people might be moving a little slower. They might be a little kinder to each other. And I think that's the whole purpose of astrology, is to inform us of the weather.
Yes. And I love looking at it that way. Isn't that great?
So good.
All right. Well, here's another one that's broad-based that people hear about. Eclipses. Okay. So I had spoken to Julia about booking for a certain day, and she knew that we were going to be in eclipse energy, which we are right now. Who knows when you're watching or hearing this. But please talk to me a little bit about that, about that phenomenon.
Eclipses are powerful. They happen also twice a year. Usually 2 happen at a time, but sometimes there'll be 3. This particular one, we started with the full moon and the lunar eclipse. There's always a portal, right? When one begins, we kind of move inward. It's like we've stepped in a time outside of time, and it's a time of recalibration. And in between the 2 eclipses, we get to really pause and have a time to go inside of ourselves. It's not a time to be starting new things, figuring things out. It's a time where the mind actually can feel a little more confused or unsettled. And the lunar eclipse on the new moon brings hidden things up from the surface, and it has an instant reveal. It's like this instant exposure. Whereas the solar eclipse on the new moon is something that's an omen for energy to come that unfolds over the next 6 months or so. And during that little portal, it's an important time, because a little bit of work on the self internally gets maximized. Whereas if we're trying to make commitments and sort out things and make bigger decisions, it doesn't really have anything to stand on, right? I'm not saying that you can't do that, right? It's if you're able to postpone something, if you're aware of it, then you're not going to do it ahead of time. It's fine to be recording things like this. I was at a Vedic astrology conference, you know, during an eclipse.
Oh, yeah.
And just when we know, it's like, oh, can you maybe do next week? No problem. Guess not. I've known people to get married in between that cycle who are happily married for 30 years.
Good.
But is that going to work out for everyone? Probably not.
Well, like you said, it's the weather. It's the weather. So to be informed about the weather, and I'm asking you these questions because it gives some general qualities that people can explore further. And to be emphasized, how does it apply specifically to you? And so it gives us a chance to learn more about our charts. And by the way, we can all find our charts online, but I mean, a Vedic astrology chart is going to be probably harder to come by. But if you want to know some of your basics, you can certainly get that for free online. All right. So any more on the eclipse you want to say, like a distinction between the lunar eclipse, the solar eclipse? And, you know, they reference this eclipse sandwich, which is, you know, happening at the time of this taping, which is early December 2021. And I know I'm feeling it again. I'm not necessarily looking for it, but boy, things are going, you know, and in a really intense place. So, I mean, I think it's, I invite you to share any other further information that you would give people on that, and so that they can explore on their own.
Mm. And not to be dogmatic, just the way that those before us honored the eclipses, some looked at it as to be a negative omen. But again, it's all of this is beyond good and bad. And so the way I was raised with eclipses is it's an inward time. So we would actually close the curtains if it was in a solar eclipse in the daytime or at night. We would not go and look at the eclipse. They say that the shadow of that accelerates transformation. And we want transformation, but not too accelerated. It's like roller skating in a jet airplane, right? Maybe not the best idea. And so also during that time, we would fast. We would actually not even drink water, usually bathe before and after. And again, people could say, okay, that's very dogmatic, but there's a purpose. Because when you're not digesting your food, when you're not intaking with the physical senses, it's easier for the self to rest in itself. And that's what the eclipse window, the actual window is for, is that acceleration into the self, peeling away from the relative world. And I think that's why sometimes everyone feels like so much is an upheaval, because it's that potent energy that when you catch it inside of yourself, you can evolve quickly, right? Or you can spiral out into this uncertainty and where am I going, and you know, get caught in circular conversations that may build.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's epic. So we're talking eclipses, and now let's talk moon. The moon. I mean, it's there for us always, and it changes so quickly. It changes much more rapidly than, I mean, some of the other astrological weather that we reference, whether it's, you know, a Venus retrograde or anything. But we've got that monthly opportunity. I mean, even if you just want to get started sort of paying attention to how the heavenly bodies can affect us, the moon would be an incredible place to start. Just observing how the energy feels on a full moon versus a new moon, for example. So tell us how the moon factors into Vedic astrology.
Beautiful. Well, I always encourage everyone, and especially those who are, like myself, a devotee of the stars or of the science, to get out there, right? Go be under that canopy of stars and journal. Journal about that, your experience with the full moon and the new moon and the different phases. In Vedic astrology, I want to say the wholeness is greater than the sum of the parts, and the constellation or nakshatra of the moon that you're born in is who you are at that depth of your being, what draws you towards some things and away from others. And so in the Vedic system of compatibility, we use the moon to say, oh, okay, you two could work well together. You could get married, or you could be in a good partnership, or, oh, I see why you'd be friends because of those preferences. And so the constellation of the moon, if you're going to look up something and dive deep into really learning about the mythology, that's what draws me in. I've just been a student of the nakshatras for so long. It doesn't get old for me, because the mythology of the constellation of the moon is going to play itself out in your life in one way or another. And so to be in reverence of that story and not take it literally, but that feeling of the mythology can teach you something about yourself. And yes, your chart is out there. And I do feel obligated to say that, like, the wholeness is greater than the sum of the parts. If you take a piece of your chart, like your moon constellation, right, you're going to be the gap in the teeth, you're going to be very wealthy today, right? So it can be very generic and sometimes even detrimental. It can be very negative. You need to pay this money to make it better, right? Or your Manglik dosha, we can get these seeds of negativity planted. So if you're going to have a reading, trust the person you're going to go see. If you're going to read about a piece of the puzzle, then take it with a grain of salt.
Okay, that's great. Well, this sounds like a beautiful way for me to let everybody know that Tulsi, I revealed your real name. Oh, no.
Well, Tulsi's my middle name, I love both of them equally.
So Tulsi is available. Catch her if you can, even in Los Angeles for in-persons, while that's still possible. And we've got website there you can check out more, and Instagram, of course, and everything like that. And I know Tulsi from a beautiful yoga community, and somebody who's very sincere and has always really walked her talk. And I just love getting down into some of the depths of this. And again, just a chance, and I know we didn't go super deep into it, but looking at how yoga and Ayurveda interweaves with the astrology, and really ultimately it's for, right? We can use all of those tools just to to really work with what shows to be our destiny and really maximize that opportunity, whether it's maybe making some changes, right, some shifts, mm-hmm. or riding the wave to the best of, you know, with courage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really true. So any parting words? I know you brought in Saraswati, the goddess of wisdom and music and science. Is that right?
Yes.
On this, so I really feel like we had that experience here. So how would you like to leave us with any final tools?
I always like to approach astrology or Vedic astrology with reverence. Don't ever try to figure it all out or approach it with a sense of trying to master it. I think the most important thing to do is approach it with an innocence, because we're here to learn from the stars, right? The stars aren't just big balls of energy out there. They're embodiments of an energy that we're here to learn from and to bow to. And so to get curious and really listen to the planets, listen to the stories without trying to move so quickly into knowing what things mean, and to learn in that sort of a way.
Mm.
And I think to keep your eyes open with that innocence.
We are all star stuff. Thanks so much, Tulsi. This has been grand. I really, really appreciate you coming in. Namaste.
Such an honor. Thank you.
Truth be told, transformation, everyone. Tools transform truth. Thanks for being here. I'm Bonnie Burkert. I have a new episode every Wednesday. It goes up at 3. Don't forget, Fridays at 3, Tony Sweet, How Sweet It Is. And, of course, Robert Hensley every Monday at 3, also live with the Minuteman Report. Thanks for being here. We appreciate your shares, your likes, your comments, and we look forward to you joining us for the next episode. Until then, shine on.